And now, back to Tesh Matters with Jeff Boggs. Phone lines are open. Reach out and touch Jeff at 367-1240.
And we are back 30 minutes after 11 o'clock, 367-1240, our phone number. Another guest coming up in studio. We do ask that you try and keep it consistent with the guest and topic, but if it is maybe an emergency or, well, if it's a real emergency, you should be calling somebody else probably, but traffic situation that you want to make us aware about, that kind of a thing. Don't hesitate to call as we say hello to Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, doing great.
You know, it seems we've talked a lot about rain this summer.
I mean, I tell you, and even last summer also, and I'm sure I mentioned this on there, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we used to have a major chinch bug issue in the summertime with our lawns, and that was because we had droughts. And what I mean by drought is we would literally have 4, 6, 8 weeks of next to no rain. Maybe every once in a while you'd get a scatter shower. It got to the point where even the sugarcane, which is a grass, they were trying to irrigate the sugarcane, Jeff, and that's amazing when you think about it. And we have not seen that in years, and therefore we really hadn't had a chinch bug issue. And but just to show you the differences, maybe not only be temperatures, but certainly there's a difference in the moisture levels that we've been getting over the last several summers, and this is no exception.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember Bobby Fletcher. You remember Bobby?
Yeah, sure do.
I met him when I was in Lafourche, and right. It seemed it was a weekly discussion about chinch bugs.
That's right.
Back in the late 90s, he was always talking about those things.
Exactly. And so you just don't see him and because of the moisture level. But we are starting to see, and that's one of the things I want to talk about really quick, is last year, Jeff, starting the end of this month, in September, you know, we had a huge sod web worm problem in the St. Augustine, and we're starting to see the moths already. And they were here last year. It's just that because we had never seen the numbers before, we didn't know to do something about it till it had caused a amount of damage. So we're telling our customers to look for the moths, and you can do some preventive maintenance. You can put grains in the lawn, and you can spray it, but start to look for it because people are coming in with the moth issue. And last year, if I recollect, what happened is we got a lot of rain, and then once it stopped raining and the grass started not growing as aggressively as it is now, we started to see the effects of the worm. And so just kind of wash the lawn, and if you want to do some preventive maintenance, might not be a bad idea because they're there.
There you go.
Thought I'd talk a little bit about one thing that people are doing now that they maybe haven't done in the past is that starting their own plants from seed. And the main thing I'm talking about is vegetables, which people actually start, and some of the mistakes people make. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is that, you know, we always talk about the summer tomato plants, and some people like to start their own seed. And it's just it's real difficult because what happens is that when the plants are young and immature, they really can't take that sun and that heat as well as once they start growing. So what people do by nature is they'll start the seed inside, which is fine until they start to sprout and come out with the true leaves. And once they start to come out with the true leaves, they need sun. And that's kind of the mistake people make. So let me kind of start from the beginning, and we'll kind of talk about that. So the ones that people are starting now, it's really too late to start from seed, like tomatoes and bell peppers. That's too late. Really, you got about another week to get those tomatoes in and for the fall production. If you start, a lot of people think you got to plant the tomatoes in the fall for, you know, to make them fall tomatoes, but they talk about production, you know, fall production. So really by the middle of August is your cutoff when it comes to the tomato plant and the bell peppers. But people are starting to plant some of the fall crops, which would be things like cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower. That's your three main ones. Lettuce is also a big one, Jeff, but that is one you do not want to get an early start. You'll be able to get the seed to come up. They'll germinate. The plant will grow, but what will happen is they're going to bolt really fast after they start to get mature, which means they go to seed. and the plant will die. So it really is, I really tell people when it comes to lettuce, October is really when you want to start it.
No matter what the conditions are in October, but pretty much you're comfortable in October.
In October, exactly. And you'll be okay. But if you want to get an early start with, and you want to do your own plants, and we'll start with plants next week when it comes to the cabbage and all that, but if you want to start your own, now's a great time to do it. But the best way to do it is the seed is very small when it comes to cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower and so the best way to do it is to take some type of mat or a it could be a flat of an old flat, and you add a good sterile soil to it, meaning that it has to be a starter soil. It can't be something high peat. It has to drain really good.
You're not digging up your backyard for it.
You definitely want to do. You don't want to do that when it comes to this. And the reason is because there's bacteria in that soil, and the tender plants, once they start to sprout, are real sensitive to any bacteria in the soil, and they will damp off or they will just melt on you. So a sterile seed starter is what you want to start with. And, I mean, you can actually use a cardboard box, a shallow cardboard box, or a tray, or something that's going to drain. But you want to put a bunch of seeds in there as opposed to putting just one or two. Because what you're going to do is you're going to actually dig those seeds up and plant them into a peat pot, or it could even be a styrofoam or a plastic pot, as long as you make a hole in it. And you're going to dig it out. But we have these, what they used to call them peat pots. They make them out of coconut liner now. And basically, you can plant the whole thing once you plant the seed and it gets big enough.
Okay.
But
okay.
What you're doing is you're scattering the seeds, in a shallow container, and you're allowing the seeds to come up. Keep in mind, to get the seeds up, you don't need sunlight. You just need a little bit of moisture to germinate them. Once they are germinated, this is where the problem comes in, and this is where most people make the mistake, is they start to germinate, and they come out with the true leaves, or their first set of leaves. And that's when they start to need sun. And that's the catch-22, because they need the sun, but they, as a tender plant, they can't take the heat that we're getting right now. So, a lot of people will come in and say, oh, I put them in my windowsill. They were germinating great, but then they got tall and lanky. And I tried to transplant, but it just fell. I put them directly in the garden, and they just went into the decline. And that's because they got spindly because they were stretching for the sun. And you will never get enough sun. I don't care if you get all day sun in a window. It needs some of that direct sunlight for a long period of time. Ideally, what you want is from sun up to about 2 o'clock. Is what you want, and then possibly shade from the rest of the time so it won't build up that heat. Keep in mind, you're talking about a young, tender plant, so it's very, very important that they never dry out when they're out in the sun. In other words, you're going to have to wet them really good in the mornings, and you can actually lay that hole flat out. Once they start to get maybe 3 or 4 inches tall in this box or tray, okay, then you're going to actually, with a fork, a plastic fork, you can actually dig these plants up and transplant them into singular containers, whether it be a Dixie cup with a hole in it or a peat cup like I was talking about, or anything in which that little seedling can grow and to develop to be a nice plant. Could you go directly to the soil with these seedlings? Yes, but normally that's done later, meaning that those old timers, what they used to do is they would start their seed in, let's say, September, and then once they started to germinate and got pretty good height, when temperatures got milder, they would go directly and direct plant these seedlings on the row, which you could do. But today with the small gardens, you don't necessarily need to do that. You can actually start your plants in these trays, dig them up with a fork, transplant them to a singular plant, and grow them out there. Once they get to be a nice size, you can actually at that point either plant the whole container if it's a self-dissolving or self, it'll break down by itself like the peat pots or the coconut pots, or dig them out of the container and plant them onto the row. But again, the most common mistake with these is not giving these plants enough sunlight because of the fear of the heat. And the fear of the heat is correct. But you're going to have to – it has to be a balancing act of sun versus heat. So ideally, all morning to maybe 2 o'clock, and do not let these plants dry out. In terms of fertilization, what kind of fertilizer you want to use during these initial stages, when you first plant the seeds in these trays, you really don't need any fertilizer at all to get them to germinate. All they need is really warmth and moisture. The warmth isn't the problem, obviously. But the moisture, you need to keep that moisture consistent so it will germinate and develop a deep root system. Once it germinates and you get to the point where you're actually going to dig these individual plants that are all scattered on these trays and put them in individual pots, that's when you can put slow-release fertilizers. But more importantly, you want to use a liquid, and there's some called liquid root stimulators, because really that's what you're trying to develop in the early stages of growth. You don't want to push these plants really hard. You just want them to get a real healthy, strong root system. And so liquid root stimulators are real important in the early stages of these seedlings.
Can you overdo that, though?
It would be really hard. You could overdo it by over-mixing. In other words, if the mixture says 1 tablespoon to a gallon and you're going to put 2 tablespoons, that wouldn't be a smart idea because you could probably burn it. But, you know, if you did it 2 or 3 times a week, or even if you did it every day, it would not be an issue.
Okay.
Because they don't have the nutrients in there that's going to be forcing a lot of vegetative growth. It's really trying to force. And remember, you know, we talked about liquid fertilizers versus dry granulated fertilizers. The basic difference is that the liquids will work very fast. They're going to be absorbed through the leaves and through the roots, but they won't last long. They might last a few days, and then they're going to leach out, which is important with these seedlings because you don't want to burn them, and you want to pick them up really quick because they have very little roots anyway. So they're going to pick it up through the roots, and more importantly, they're going to pick it up through those leaves. So these liquid root stimulators are very important in terms of establishing a young, viable seedling with a lot of roots. And you would do that, really. You could apply the root stimulator to the time of planting. And again, when you transplant them, it would be important to use the liquids because in transplanting, you're going to break some roots and you're going to kind of maybe make that plant go into mild shock. Okay, and so by using the liquid root stimulators, it will they will be able to pick it up quickly, and it will kind of cause that plant to not go into really any shock. So when you get to the point of transplanting, the key would be sunlight, consistent moisture, and the liquid root stimulators. And once they're transplanted, maybe the first week you could use the root stimulator, maybe twice a week, to allow that plant to absorb that fertilizer and get established. If you do that, you should have a full, healthy, stocky plant as opposed to one that may be spindly. And kind of getting back to when we're planting our seeds in these flat trays, don't overseed it, because remember, that's going to be the same problem. If you got a 100 seeds in an area, in a square foot area that should only have 10, you're going to have these massive plants coming up all competing for sunlight. And even though you may have it in the full sun, it's going to be the strong will survive. So you're going to get out of that 100 seeds, you're going to get 4 or 5 of them that are poking out above. And it just makes it more difficult to dig them up and transplant them. And again, they're competing with one another for that sunlight. And so plant them thin. You know, it's one of those situations where usually trays are inexpensive, or plastic trays, the old plant trays you could use, and plant them thin. Maybe if your final spacing is even 2 or 3 inches apart, that would be perfect, because when you go to dig them up, you're not going to disturb anything around it. So even though to me it's easier to do plants right now, it's easier to pull that off now than it is with the spring planting. And the reason I say that, in the spring planting, we're not only dealing with sunlight issues, trying to get that plant to give sun, but we're also dealing with cold temperature issues, in which that plant needs the heat, but you can't in the sun. But it, you know, the temperatures are, you know, the north wind's blowing, the temperature's in the 30s, and the wind's blowing, and so that plant can't go out there for a few days. Therefore, you're not getting enough sun, and so it's a real challenge in the spring. Whereas now the challenge is simply making sure it gets the sun and keeps the moisture while it's getting that sun, and you should be fine. kind of stay ahead of the insects this time of year. We're always talking about fungus, and you know the fungus is very prevalent out there right now, Jeff. Most of the plants have finished at this point. In other words, you know, some people do have tomatoes growing and producing, but for the most part, the spring crop is finished, and people are starting to prepare their land and get ready for the fall season. And so even though the bacteria is not out there, or it is out there, the plants aren't out there and aren't being affected. So kind of remember that is that when you do water your plants, always water them in the morning, and that's even more critical when it comes to those seedlings and those pots that you singly plant that are getting ready to be transplanted, because damping off is a problem that's sorrel related, and if you keep it too wet during the day, especially at night, they will damp off. So always, ideally, to keep it simple, water in the mornings, and try not to. You can water in the middle of the day if you had to. You know, people say, "Well, I can't water in the middle of the day because it'll scald." No, you'll be fine. You don't want to water, let's say, after 6 or 7 o'clock, where that soil level will stay damp all night long, and sometimes you'll run into problems there.
Because often that's just the opposite, right? Where usually a nighttime watering is a good thing.
Well, evening. No, it's actually always for most plants. There may be some tropical plants where, you know, the rainfall, they like the moisture. But 90% of even flowers, Jeff, certainly any vegetable at any stage, ideally it's always in the morning.
Okay.
And the reason is that it gives a chance for the soil and the leaves to dry out, so they don't stay moist at night, and this bacteria loves it. In other words, the sun's not drying it out, so the leaves are wet, the ground is wet, and that's when you get fungus issues. And so, you know,
Am I thinking maybe lawns, like especially during dry periods, where you'd rather water at night? Or
no, the same thing with the lawns. Now, you're correct. They're watered at night, but they're actually watered early in the morning. It might be 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, where the sun will come up and dry pretty quickly. But really, if you can help it, even lawns, you do not want to water at midnight or 11 o'clock at night. You will have fungus issues. Okay. And that's why we have them, is because you can't control the rainfall, obviously. And so we get these rains late in the evening or at night, and we start to see lawn fungus issues. We start to see a lot of issues that we would normally not see. And that's why when people have irrigation systems, whether they be ones in their containers, Jeff, where they have the raised beds and they have these automated drip systems that you just turn on, we tell people, turn them on, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, and just wet the ground, and that is ideal. You really don't want to have to turn this on, you know, late in the evening where the sunlight won't be able to dry it. And so if you have a choice, I always say, if you have a choice where you have to water and it's going to be, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or it's going to be, you know, 8 o'clock in the evening, due to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to lose some moisture because of evaporation.
Yeah.
But
I guess that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. If you have to, you got to. It's not a problem. Obviously, I can't because it's going to kill the plant. No, that's not true. And I know where they're getting it from. They're getting it from is you know, a lot of times we'll get scalding. We get a bunch of rain. And people have plants in the rows, and the soil doesn't drain that well. And so that soil fills up with water, and then the sun comes out. And technically what's happening is because there's no oxygen in the soil, the plant can't pick up the moisture. Even though the ground is wet, 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 there's no air to allow that plant to pick it up, and so it fries. Well, you're not going to water that much. You know, the plant needs water. You water because the ground is dry. And so the ground's not going to be so saturated that you're going to scald that plant. So that's really that part of it. It's a non-issue. You can water whenever you have to, but late in the evening is always a bad idea, whether it be grass, ornamentals, or especially vegetables.
Gotcha.
And then once you plant your transplants directly in the ground, and we'll start with transplants starting next week, at the actual plants, but you know, you got plenty of time to do it. But once you start plant them directly in the ground, keep in mind that the soil temperature gets hot. So if you can mulch them slightly, and then as the plant continues to grow, mulch them a little bit more so that it holds that moisture and the soil temperatures won't get that hot, and then you won't get a lot of evaporation. So that's really important with the young plant, and that you continue to add mulch. You know, what is the best mulch? There's a lot of compost is great. You want something composted, and preferably if you're going to use a mulch out of a bag, pine mulch is the best because it breaks down as opposed to cypress or cedar, which is great for an ornamental bed, but
right.
It's not great for a vegetable bed. Do we have a phone call or not?
I do believe we do. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're in the air.
Hey, Jeff, Ricky, what's going on, bud?
Oh, doing good, man. How are you?
All right, buddy. I just got a question for Richard, and I'm going to hang up and listen. I'm going to turn the radio back on. When is a good time to use a soaker hose, Rich? And I'm going to hang up and listen. Y'all have a great day.
Any particular place, though, for the soaker hose? I guess you didn't catch
Well, the answer is going to be the same. So
okay, good.
Good. When it comes to the soaker hose, it's going to be always he asks what time to run it.
The best time to run it
is going to be the same answers I gave, is that the mornings, early mornings, would be the best, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning to soak it. One, if you do it then, the water will have plenty of time to penetrate the soil, so it won't evaporate. Secondly, the advantage of the soaker hose is that it's not wetting the leaves, which we're always talking about, you know, the leaves getting wet, and so that makes it a positive. And then thirdly, you're not wetting that ground where the ground will stay wet at night when you're promoting fungus issues. If you water in the morning, the sun is coming out at 7, 8 o'clock. By 10 o'clock in the morning, the ground is going to be dry. Certainly by the end of the day, the ground will be dry, and then you start the cycle over. It's always better when you're using soaker hoses or drip. You know, we handle a drip line. The drip line is just more consistent. Soaker hoses, I find, sometimes, you know, they'll work for a few weeks, and all of a sudden, you know, one side of the hose is getting really wet, the other side isn't. But when you're using any kind of drip system, consistency in the lines is very important. But more importantly, it's real important to let those soaker hoses run for a long period of time and do less waterings per week, as opposed to running for a short period of time and running them every day. Now, there's no magic answer to say, look, everybody should run their drip lines or their soaker hoses, you know, every other day for a half hour a day. And the reason that's not the answer is, one, you don't know how much the water is being emitted. Everybody is different. Two, soil types are major differences, meaning that some soil types are high in clay, sometimes are high in sand. So drainage is important in terms of determining, you know, how often and how long you run, and then the type of plant you're growing, you know, whether it be vegetables or ornamentals, and then sunlight. If you're in a sunny situation, obviously it's going to dry more. So there are a lot of factors that go into it, but the rule is really the same, is that if you're growing plants, it's always better to let that drip line go for a longer period of time, the water go deeper, so that the plant will develop a deeper root system. Plants are like people in the sense that they're lazy. If you give it water every day and that water is there an inch deep, that root system is only going an inch deep, and that's it. Whereas if you soak it and that water is going 6-8 inches deep, it's going to go to that depth. And what's the advantage of that? If for some reason you get into a drought, or we get to a hot periods that it's really dry, the plants will have a deep, deep root system, so they can handle drier weather or hotter weather without having major issues. So, you know, the short answer is, when it comes to watering, drip line, soaker hoses, or whatever, the mornings, 4, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, closer to 5, 6, 7 in the morning is ideal. The more you water and the less often you water is better. But the only way to know that is to kind of go in there and feel the soil, look at the plants, see how the plants are reacting. And in truth, it changes. You know, how often you're watering changes from April as opposed to now, if it wasn't raining. Obviously, if right now, if we were in a drought and it was 93 degrees, you may have to water every day. Whereas a month ago, where it was maybe getting to the upper 90s, it may be every second or third day. So you got to kind of get a feel for the soil and get a feel for the plants to exactly figure it out, but that's the theory behind it.
There you go. There you go. Anything else you wanted to add today?
I think that's it, Jeff. Other than everybody hang in there, and it won't be long where the cool weather's coming. You know, we hit August, and to me, we're on the downside. Maybe I'm being optimistic.
But you are. You are.
September is around the corner, and it's going to be an early fall.
You think so? You saw your shadow today?
I did. Yeah. That's it.
Excellent. We'll look forward to that prediction coming true. Perhaps. Anyway, I'm trying to think if I had a question. I was a little concerned about my poinsettia. I noticed it was growing toward the sun, and so I turned it around to try and encourage the other side to grow. And it's kind of limping.
It's limping. Okay, I'm going to step away from the mic just for a second.
Okay, and he was probably going to check moisture or something like that, and I have been watering it in the way I usually do, but Richard has brought it a little closer to him.
Actually, Jeff, it doesn't look that bad.
The leaves look great. It's just that it's not upright like it was, and again, it was leaning toward the sun, so I turned it the opposite direction, and I hope I didn't stress it.
I think you did good. What we're looking at here is the poinsettia that he planted.
This is 2 years ago.
2 years ago, and one, it needs a little fertilizer. Only the reason I can tell that is because I know you didn't fertilize it lately, right?
Yeah, I don't have fertilizer.
Exactly. So I need to bring some. And actually, it looks like it's almost been pruned. When growers grow, if you don't do anything to a poinsettia, it's just going to go straight up and not be as full. But what they do is they keep pruning it, and this one has been topped for whatever reason. It might have been naturally.
Are you saying someone has topped this?
I'm saying yes, it has.
I got some people
that
shouldn't be touching
stuff. But I think it's good. I think it's good because it's going to be a really bushy plant as opposed to a tall plant, and that's what you want with poinsettias. The bushier it is, the more bracts you get, and the more bracts you get is where the color comes. And so if you don't pinch them, you're just going to get, let's say, one set of bracts. But by pinching them, and they may have been pruned. They may have just been, Jeff, kind of artificially pruned because they were jammed against something. I think that's more to do with it than anything. But it's a nice, full plant. It's only maybe eight inches tall. But you got plenty of time for growth, Jeff. So I got to remember to bring you some fertilizer and get this thing going so that you can be ready for Christmas.
I appreciate the thought. And I noticed it didn't turn colors this year, this one. You brought in one fresh in November, December last year, and someone walked away with it. I'm not sure if it was an employee or someone else off the street.
Right.
So that's why that's, from 2 years ago.
So this one never turned red.
Not this. Usually it's February or so.
Right. You know what it is? It's not getting enough sun. Is what it is. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, a lot of people think poinsettias, they need that shortened day.
Exactly.
They do, but it's like anything else. They'll grow a poinsettia in full sun from spring till about August. And then in August, they're going to start shortening that day length. And that's when it forces it to bloom in December. So we need to find a sunnier spot out here and see if we can give it more sun. But that's what's going on. If it didn't bloom, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, in the old studios, I had morning sun, I had afternoon sun. Right. It was in a great location. But
we need to talk about Jerry maybe getting some sunlight in this place.
There you go. Well, we'll see. Anyway, always a pleasure. Richard, appreciate you coming by, and we'll look forward to the next time. You're still a ways away from opening 7 days a week, right?
Yeah, when it cools off, and hopefully it's not that far, but usually it's October.
Gotcha. Well, again, Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center at the corner of Hopkins and West St. Peter. Again, how's the construction going over there?
Well, actually, in our section, they have completed the previous blocks before us, about five or six blocks. They're still working way down. They haven't done the overlay yet.
Right, right.
But the drainage is really good.
Good to hear.
Yep.
Good to hear. Richard, always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Tesh Matters, 10 till 1 on Kane Radio, AM 1240.